It's the Legal Toolkit with Jared Correa. With guest Chad Sands, a round of the game of life, musical guest The Jury Pool, and for you quitters out there, we continue our ongoing spotlight on alternative careers. This episode, Pigeon Racing.
Welcome back, y'all. It's the Legal Toolkit Podcast. My name is Jared Correa, and because Gene Rayburn was unavailable, I'm your host. I'm the CEO of Red Cave Law Firm Consulting, a business management consulting service for attorneys. Find us online at www.redcavelegal.com. I'm the COO of Gideon Software, Inc. We build chatbots so law firms can convert more leads. You can find out more about Gideon at www.gideon.legal. Before we get rolling, I'd like to take a moment to thank my mom for listening to every episode. Hi, Mom. I'd also like to thank our sponsors. They're the reason you're listening to the show right now. We would like to thank Alert Communications for sponsoring this podcast. If any law firm is looking for call, intake, or retainer services available 24/7, 365, just call 866-827-5568. Scorpion is the leading provider of marketing solutions for the legal industry. With nearly 20 years of experience serving attorneys, Scorpion can help grow your practice. Learn more at scorpionlegal.com. TimeSolve is the number one web-based time and billing software for lawyers. Providing solutions since 1999, TimeSolve provides the most comprehensive billing features for law firms big and small. www.timesolve.com. Clio's cloud-based practice management software makes it easy to manage your law firm from intake to invoice. Try it for free at clio.com. That's C-L-I-O.com. I'm not a cat. Everybody's seen the video. My kids loved it. The lawyer who has a cat filter on his video on Zoom and can't turn it off, and he's in a court hearing. The darting eyes, the confusion, the mouth syncing up with speech. It is one of the more brilliant unintentional comedy pieces I've seen in a long time. And the internet's reaction is, hey, that's all of us. Who doesn't have pandemic fatigue? Who doesn't have Zoom fatigue? Who hasn't had video conferencing issues? It's just superb fodder for the current mood, right? Everybody loves the I'm not a cat lawyer. But I would say that as a lawyer, it's pretty embarrassing to be a cat on a video that you can't turn off. And there's also a real lawyer behind the cat filter. So Stu's name is Rod Ponton, I think it's pronounced. He's out of Texas. And I saw an interview with this guy and he said, I always wanted to be known as being a good lawyer and not the cat lawyer. So people always ask me, like, why do you spend so much time talking to lawyers about legal technology issues? Well, this is why, everybody. This is Exhibit A. And now I'm going to have to talk about cat filters for the next 3 months of my life. But here's the deal. Like, this thing is totally preventable if you just understand the settings of the software you're using. So this should really be table stakes, right? And that's not a high bar, pun intended, by the way. And if you look at the way that ethics rules have changed, the way that state laws have changed, this is directly in line with what a lawyer's modern view of professional competence should be. By the definition that was added a while back to comment 8 in rule 1.1 of the rules of professional conduct, this is not competent lawyering because the lawyer in this case is not using tech appropriately, not using it in a reasonably secure way. More on that in a second. Now, nobody's ever going to get disbarred for this type of thing or sanctioned for that matter because the bar overseers generally don't understand technology either, right? But I do think it's dangerous to suggest, as the judge in this case did, that lawyers are trying really hard during the pandemic, and that's a good thing. I'd look at it from another perspective, is that if lawyers don't understand these technology issues, one day it's a cat filter. The other day, maybe someone's exposing a highly sensitive email because they're sharing the wrong screen on Zoom. So sorry to be a buzzkill, but there's a lot of data security issues in place here. For one thing, if you look at the video, it's clear, and in further investigation, it's been made even more clear that the attorney was using his assistant's computer. And it's likely that the assistant's daughter put that cat filter on the Zoom account. So That's likely violations of lots of stuff, right? Ethics rules, state laws. Again, nobody's going to be prosecuted for this. I'm not suggesting that anybody's going to be prosecuted for this, but look, it's 2021. Everybody's working from home. You shouldn't be using other people's computers. You shouldn't be allowing other people's kids to change the settings on your computer. My computer at home, I've got a fingerprint touchpad that you have to use to get into the computer. Why? Because I don't want my kids messing with the shit I have on my computer. Again, this should be table stakes stuff, and attorneys still aren't acting like it's that important. So while I would never wish for a world in which there was no "I'm a cat lawyer," I think it's emblematic of the fact that attorneys need to get their shit together in terms of data security and tech usage. I think it's well past time. Even if legal institutions are never going to penalize any attorneys for it, I think that attorneys should start to look at this in a more aggressive way as best practices within a modern law firm. Either that, or this is just a cat world takeover that we all missed. Next up, we're going to talk to Chad Sands about unusual legal marketing and how he's basically the Forrest Gump of 1990s Hollywood. You won't want to miss it. Did you know that firms using electronic payments collect an average of $15,179 more per lawyer and see 6% more revenue growth? Simply put, law firms using electronic payments, on average, bring in higher case volumes and more revenue. For more insights to help turbocharge your law firm, check out Clio's Legal Trends Report, a compilation of industry insights. Go to clio.com to download your free copy today. Imagine billing day being the happiest day of the month instead of the day you dread. Nobody went to law school because they love drafting invoices for clients. At TimeSolve, our attorneys save on average over 8 hours a month in billing work. That means more billable time and turning billing day into happy day. Learn more about how to get to your time and billing happy place at TimeSolve.com. That's www.TimeSolve.com. Remember, that's TimeSolve.com. Okay, it's time to get to the dolphin in the middle of this Subway tuna melt. Let's interview our guest. My guest today is Chad Sands, who is the Vice President of Marketing at Tracers. Tracers provides cloud-based investigative research software for the legal profession. Chad, welcome to the show. How are you?
I am great. It's good to be with you, Jared. I've always wanted to say that, by the way. It's good to be with you. It's like, it seems like they always say it on NPR, and I don't do a lot of podcasts, so I really wanted to use that.
Check that off the bucket list.
Yes. Turning
this into This American Life.
Right.
So let's talk about legal stuff. That's part one. Stay tuned for part two, where we're going to talk about the fun stuff. So, Chad, you've been in legal tech for a while. You want to run down your background a little bit?
Yeah, I started at MyCase. And that was my, I kind of went from real estate marketing into legal tech. And so I did content at MyCase for a couple years. And the director of marketing at MyCase had moved on to eventually Smokeball, Sarah mm-hmm. Bottorff.
Yep.
And so she hired me at Smokeball. And I was at Smokeball for about 2.5 years. Did content, digital, ads, and then, you know, marketing operations, kind of did a whole bunch of stuff at Smokeball for a couple years. And now I am at Tracers. I started at Tracers last year. And so while Tracers isn't exclusively legal, it's a big focus for us. But yeah, so now I've been at Tracers almost a year. So coming up on like half a decade in legal tech.
You're like the Swiss Army knife of legal tech marketing. Well, let me ask you, how did you move from like real estate marketing to legal tech marketing? Was that like due to the relationship between MyCase and AppFolio, or was it just like something
you
wanted to try?
I was doing real estate marketing for like Sotheby's International Realty here in Santa Barbara. So I got to make like nice glossy magazine ads for like $20 million homes. And I love working with the agents, but I realized that I was going to be just making newspaper ads for like a long time.
And you were like, the newspaper business, heading in the right direction.
Right. And I worked in affiliate marketing for a little bit. And I kind of wanted to get into tech and software because I was interested. And
yep.
And then I just had a chance to go to MyCase, and that's how I landed there.
So this one thing I thought you did that was really cool at Smokeball, and we're going to talk about like how legal tech companies market, how you can crib from that playbook in your solo or small firm, like the Calista Flockhart campaign.
Yes.
I thought that was totally different from what any other legal tech company was doing or is doing. So that was your thing, right? You came up with that.
Well, I mean, I'm going to give
you credit for it, even if
you
didn't.
All right, I'll take it. I'll take it. It was totally different. And I think it will be, it's like, I don't think it'll ever be done again, to be quite honest.
Probably not. So how'd you guys come up with that? And the whole thing was like Calista Flockhart, for people who haven't seen it, pretending she invented Smokeball. Maybe she did. I don't know.
Yeah.
And it was just a really funny commercial that you put together. Long form commercial, essentially.
Yeah, it was basically like a 3-minute long form, and then we did 30 seconds and, you know, 6-second bumpers out of it. But this Australian copywriter and production company came up with the concept, and we all loved it. The whole take on this celebrity kind of endorsing a product and then going too far the day of the shoot, and then like claiming that she invented the software, and there's this back and forth with the director. And, you know, it took a while to get together, but like she signed the contract and, you know, Jane Oxley and Hunter Steele came out to LA, and I'm on the West Coast with also Christian Beck, and we shot it in LA over one day. And we premiered it at the ABA Tech Show, right? So we had it at the booth.
Yeah.
And honestly, it was really interesting for me because I went to USC Film School and I had worked on the production side of a lot of stuff like commercials or features.
Yep.
And it was just weird for me to be on the client side, kind of like, especially the day of the shoot, because like I'm kind of like,
were you like, you're doing this wrong?
Yes. I was like, why is the director interrupting Calista so loud? You know what I mean? And like, I'm pacing in the back, but like also know that if I say anything, no one's going to care because I'm just
You're like, the key grip is screwing everything up. Somebody take care of that.
Exactly. Or like, I was talking with like the assistant camera guys and I was like, you guys are using a zoom lens, huh? And like, I'm like, I like primes. And he's like a features guy. Right. Which was just funny, but it was,
that's awesome.
It was a great campaign. We loved it. And then, you know, we tried to get it out there on social, but we spent a lot of money making it, so we didn't have a lot of money to promote it. But ultimately, I thought it was hilarious that it how it came together.
I loved it. I thought it was really cool. So that's like an example of doing something a little bit different in terms of legal tech marketing, like way different than what people usually do. But your thesis, which I kind of share, is that legal tech marketing has been done the same way by everybody for a long time. So can you walk people through how that gets done? Like, how's the sausage get made? And why do these companies, they don't change it up? Like, why is it always the same?
Yeah, well, I mean, so you got to do review sites, right? Like, you know, Capterra, G2 Crowd, Trustpilot.
Yes.
So we got to get in a feeding frenzy to get all of our favorite, you know, customers or slash users to leave us a review site, you know, review. And then, they're not only paying for the clicks and the traffic from the review sites, but they're paying for like other content that those review sites create. So there's like thousands of dollars right there, just like into the review bucket.
Right.
And then obviously like PPC, which is, it's like, you know, sharks in the water in terms of pay-per-click and Google ads. Like,
oh, especially in terms of like keywords for legal tech, right? Those cost a fortune.
Yeah, like legal practice management software. I mean, if you want to be like totally vicious to some of these software companies, just Google that and click on the the ranking one ad, because it's like they'll just blow through their budget in like a couple days.
Just keep clicking on it for like
just keep,
2 hours.
Just keep clicking, because it's you know, 60 it's $60 to $120 a click for some of those keywords on to be number one. And you got all of these software companies like outbidding each other or trying to get on the top of page one.
So we got reviews, we got PPC. What else do you see in terms of like common practices?
Well, there's, obviously social media. I think lawyers are kind of into social media, consume social. So they're all trying to be active on social. You know, you have a lot of content sharing, a lot of ebooks, a lot of podcasts.
Right.
And, you know, there's the display retargeting banners. So once you visit their site, you're going to see how great their product is and how much more you could bill when on every other website you go around. And then there's, you know, the partners, like the short list of of legal tech, you know, blogs out there that also kind of foster some reviews and and help amplify the content. So there's it's a small ecosystem, but everyone's, you know, trying to get to the top of it. It's tough to crack.
Oh, it totally is. So before we talk about like maybe doing things in a little bit more innovative way, like that laundry list of marketing tactics that you just laid out for us, like how could solo and small firm attorneys take advantage of some of that? Because they're not going to have the budget of like a large marketing company. Like what should they focus on? What should they avoid? What are your thoughts there?
Well, you know, set aside a big budget celebrity endorsement campaign, you know, and I'll try and come up with the blog post you guys can include in the show notes where I can dive into some of these with more detail, but like a top five things you can do for marketing your law firm in 2021. One thing, obviously, I think is having not just a good website, but a great website.
Yes.
And a great website is optimized for SEO. It's the images are sized for web and aren't just the huge high-res file you downloaded from Unsplash that takes 10 seconds to load. that your site is structured, that it has a sitemap, an HTML sitemap, and an XML sitemap, that you have internal links, that you have backlinks from other websites. So, and that you have a lot of pages and that you keep updating those pages. And if you don't update your product pages, quote unquote, then you should be having a blog and pushing out content through your blog, and those sites are updated. And that, you know, work with someone who an SEO who can set up, you know, not only Google Analytics, but Google Search Console and Bing Webmasters. And so you can kind of monitor and track, you know, your impressions and your clicks. So I think having a great website is kind of a must. And that if you're going to do anything, focus on that, because that's your, you know, face to the digital world.
Right.
You know, and I think we've talked about video, obviously, that historically maybe law firms have run, you know, and the 30-second commercial on their local broadcast for their city that they can get, you know. But there's other options out there. There's companies like Choosel, and I think Genius Monkey is another one, these programmatic advertising companies that can get you into streaming TV and connected TVs.
Oh, yeah.
And you can actually have your 30-second commercial run during Chopped or Meet the Press. And that these are, you know, more modern consumers who have cut the cable and are watching streaming television. And that's a new channel, so to speak, that a lot of firms aren't using and maybe don't even realize is out there. But it's a great way to get your polished 30-second commercial into new audiences. You know, we've talked about social, you know, again, and video with social, I think, is more opportunity there, you know. I think Chris Fowler is an ESPN commentator, and he does these great things like called the Saturday Recap, and he sips tequila, and he just shares his thoughts on the games of the day. And, you know, do your version of that, but for your law firm or just topics in general. Right. I think in LA, there's a public radio station, KCRW, and there's a show every Monday. The show's called Press Play with Madeline Brand. And every Monday she has her legal eagle, you know, come and commentate with hot topics on law. So, you know, you don't even need to start your own podcast or, you know, get on somebody else's podcast, because I think there's a lot of podcasts out there, and not every lawyer should necessarily create their own. But I think those are a couple ideas. I'll simmer and come up with a couple more, and I'll give you guys a top five blog post you can include in the show notes.
Yeah, I feel like for those, I think that if I'm a lawyer, I'm probably spending time on the content side of it.
Right.
And being active on social and having like a really unique voice, and then I'm farming out the SEO.
Yes.
I mean, let's be real, you're not going to learn SEO in a day. Like the vast majority of lawyers, they couldn't even tell you what SEO stands for. All right, now, that's a perfect segue, because I want to talk about uniqueness in a little bit. The uniqueness, Chad Sands, of your own life. Will you stick around and talk to us?
Yeah. Right. Yes, yes.
So thanks so much. That's Chad Sands of Tracers. Now, Chad is coming back, as well as our musical guest. That's going to be the Jury Pool. So stick around in our next segment for that. As the largest legal-only call center in the U.S., Alert Communications helps law firms and legal marketing agencies with new client intake. Alert captures and responds to all leads 24/7, 365 as an extension of your firm in both Spanish and English. Alert uses proven intake methods, customizing responses as needed, which earns the trust of clients and improves client retention. To find out how Alert can help your law office, call 866-827-5568 or visit alertcommunications.com/LTN. Now more than ever, an effective marketing strategy is one of the most important things your law firm can have, and Scorpion can help. With nearly 20 years of experience serving the legal industry, Scorpion has proven methods to help you get the high-value cases you deserve. Join thousands of attorneys across the country who have turned to Scorpion for effective marketing and technology solutions. For a better way to grow your practice, visit scorpionlegal.com. Welcome to the rear end of the Legal Toolkit, the Rump Roast. It's a grab bag of short-form topics of my choosing. As I mentioned before, we're going to play a little game today called The Game of Life. That's right. I'm not going to torture Chad with impossible to answer trivia questions. I'll save that for my next guest. And the reason for that is because Chad's a really interesting dude, and we're going to find out why. So, Chad, would you be offended if I said that you were not necessarily world famous yourself, but famous adjacent?
I would not be offended at all. Okay. I like famous adjacent. It's like Beverly Hills adjacent.
I feel like I just made that up.
I think that's a compliment, actually.
Okay. I meant it as a compliment.
Okay. Yeah.
So you talked about the work you've done in legal tech marketing, but you're also a producer and the creative director of your own company, which is Jumper Away. Can you talk to people a little bit about that?
Well, Jumper Away is, my creative agency shingle that does, freelance work going back to my days in Los Angeles and now a lot of interactive and website stuff. As I mentioned, I graduated from USC Film School, so I lived the dream in LA for about 8 years and did a whole bunch of different stuff down there.
Well, so let's talk about USC Film School for a little bit. So you did stuff like you worked on the Terry Tate Office Linebacker.
I did. I did work on. Yeah, that's right. It was definitely like back in the birth of kind of branded content marketing. Yeah. And Rawson Thurber was the director. He went on to make like Dodgeball and a whole bunch of other movies.
Oh, I love Dodgeball.
But Terry Tate, I was a PA on Terry Tate. It's still like voted one of the best Super Bowl commercials in history. It wasn't made to be a Super Bowl commercial. Like Reebok, I think, just loved it so much and turned it into one. But like, for example, like I PA'd, it was like a 2-week shoot. And like I had to pick up the guy who played Terry Tate at his like apartment in like North Hollywood or like towards the Valley. And like he would like eat like 12 eggs for breakfast and like a whole roasted chicken himself during lunch. And
he was like The Rock before there was The Rock.
Yes. And like those hits, were real hit. Like he was really hitting these actors and like.
Really? Oh, yeah. I didn't know that. Oh, yeah. That makes it even better.
Yes.
He's just like destroying people on set.
Oh yeah. Like people were worried sometimes. Like there was like a silence fell over after they were like cut because they weren't even sure if like the stunt person was going to be okay.
Like I think Alan broke his femur. Yes. We need some help here.
Yeah. Yes.
And you also worked for Doug Liman. So can you talk about who that is and then how you also were hanging out in the bathroom with Ryan Gosling? Maybe I should phrase that differently.
Go ahead. I mean, so that was actually my first job out of school. And after I came back to LA after a couple months, and I was basically the receptionist for Doug Liman and Dave Bartus's production company called Hypnotic. So they had done like The OC was one of their big hit TV show. And obviously Doug Liman did Swingers and The Bourne Identity. Yep. And so like I got to like roll calls and, Brad Pitt calls in and wants to talk to Doug. And I'm like, one moment, please. The Ryan Gosling was just awkward because I go to the bathroom.
Is he weird or was it just weird that you guys were in the bathroom at the same time?
We didn't even talk because he was like there for a meeting to meet Doug and Dave. And so like I go to the bathroom and he's in the bathroom, I think, before the meeting, basically.
Yeah.
And so I kind of see him and it's like, oh, it's Ryan Gosling. And, we're at the urinals. And then but after the meeting, like I had to go to the bathroom again. I was drinking too much Diet Coke or something. And that he's in the bathroom. And then so I walk in the bathroom and now it's just weird because I feel like he thinks I'm chasing him into right. the bathroom.
Right. And then are you guys thinking, like, which one of us is incontinent? Right. Is it yes. both of us?
Yes. So, like, I love that story because it's just so awkward and I'm ashamed of it. But
that is really funny.
What can you do?
So I once shared a bathroom with George Bush, former president of the United States.
And what happened? What happened? But did you do it twice in the same day?
Like just once. But there was like Secret Service, so I don't know how I got into the bathroom. Like right. he was the commencement right. speaker for my college graduation. I'm just like waltzing into the bathroom, and I'm like, it's weird. There's a lot of cops here or whatever. And I go to the urinal, I turn to my left, and it's George Bush. So
you could have been like John Malkovich in like that Clint Eastwood movie with like a plastic gun. Right?
So of course I was like, "How's it hanging, Mr. President?" So right. I was a stupid college kid, but he was a super nice guy, actually. Like I've always liked George Bush after that.
A little low and to the left.
Well, probably to the right.
The classic.
Him, if we're being serious.
Okay. I mean that's too good. That's too
I know.
Good
right I know. I just laid it out there for
me. I see what you did there.
I want to get into your music stuff, but you also wrote a screenplay, right? Or a script adaptation that was optioned for a Jack Nicholson movie.
That's right. I mean, see, like, that's why I like you, like, famous adjacent, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I told people there was going to be good stuff here. I wasn't lying.
And I actually, I don't really talk about all of this stuff too much. I do feel like a douchebag, but there are, you know, I do have some interesting stories, that, you know, and I do feel like I've been almost famous a handful of times. But I read this book, Henderson the Rain King, in college, and I loved it when I read it. And then a couple years later, I was working for Doug Lyman, and I kind of focused on screenwriting at SC, and I ended up tracking down the producer, who is this producer, Andrew Bronsberg, who did this, he did a lot of movies, but one of his more famous ones was Being There with Peter Sellers.
Yeah, I've heard of that movie.
And I kind of cold called him, and he lived in Vienna, and I convinced him that I should write this adaptation. And at that point, I didn't really know Jack Nicholson had loved the book and wanted to make it into a movie. Mm. Long story short, kind of, I sent Andrew Bronsberg the first 20 pages. He didn't get back to me for like 3 months. And then he finally said, "This is great. Like, finish it." He optioned it from me.
Yeah.
So it was my first, you know, script that was optioned. I got paid. Cool.
Yeah.
He came out to LA and he stayed at like the Peninsula, and like I just remember him like making phone calls because I would go meet him and he's like talking on the phone and he was like, "I'm living here. I'm living at the Peninsula and I'm making a movie." And it was like this older guy from Europe who like I think this was like because really what the truth is that he had been trying to make this movie since the early 80s with Jack.
Oh, wow.
Like from like the Postman Always Ring Twice days and like with Polanski in the early 80s and had all of these scripts done throughout the year. And it just never like took off. And the studios, I think, you know, it's kind of it's not a quote unquote commercial story. It's about a wealthy guy going to Africa to find his soul.
Yeah.
I got to actually, you'll enjoy this. I got to drive in my 1989 gold Ford Tempo that had such a bad oil leak. I would have to put a cup underneath like while I was working during the day. I got to drive
right there.
I got to drive that up Mulholland Drive and basically deliver the script to the gate at Jack's house.
Oh, and that's pretty cool.
And then we went home and bought a bottle of $6 Andre champagne to celebrate. Because, like, we're like, this is it, you know? Like, Jack's attached.
I feel like I've made it.
Yeah, I've made it. Like, who's not, like, what studio would not want to make this? Like, Pulitzer Prize winning novel, Jack Nicholson, like, going to Africa. Who's going to say no to it? And then, like, 4 weeks later, like, I read that Jack's attached to the bucket list, you know, about this old guy finding his soul.
Oh, and yes. And that I remember that movie. That movie
with
was
Morgan
made, right?
Freeman, who has like his guide, and they go to Africa, actually, ironically, in the bucket list. So there it died. And I,
sadness.
You know, that was it. It was gone.
So we talked about your Hollywood career. You were also very heavily involved in music as well. So you actually were in a Seattle band as a teenager, and you recorded some demos in Pearl Jam studio, right?
I did, yeah. Music was probably my first love, and still kind of, in many ways, is my eighth grade band called Subminute Radio. We recorded, we convinced our parents to give us some money to record an EP at this studio in Tacoma, Washington.
Yeah.
And then, like, the drummer sent our demo tape into 107.7 The End. And there's this DJ, Marco Collins, who, like, is now in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, really? This is in Washington?
Yeah, this is up. He was up in Seattle. And, you know, he, like, put Beck and Nirvana on the radio the first time. And that's why he's in the Rock and Roll, just because his influence of 90s rock and grunge. But the drummer sent the demo tape into Marco, and he put my phone number as the backup on this letter that he wrote with, like, crayon to get attention. And so one night Marco calls Ryan, but it was in the days of, like, you only had a landline and there was, like, call waiting, and you either had call waiting or you didn't. And his little sister was talking on the phone. And so then by fate, Marco calls me and, like, puts me on the radio. And, you know, we get our, you know, first single played on The End in Seattle, the biggest radio station, one of them on the West Coast at that time. And I get interviewed and, like, you know, I get to go into high school the next day.
How old are you at this point?
I was a sophomore.
Oh, so you're like 16?
Yeah, so 16. And, like, that year, like, so we went with Marco and our manager, and they rented an RV and convinced our parents to let us go on this 2-week, like, West Coast tour. And, like, we played at the Viper Room and all of these other.
Oh, my God. Wow. That's so, like, the real deal.
We were, like, 16, and, like, we had, like, EMI publishing out and all these record labels watching our showcase shows. We played South by Southwest.
Oh, wow.
And, like, we were supposed to be, do you remember Silverchair, that Australian band?
Yes, so,
like,
you were the next Silverchair.
We were America's Silverchair. And once again,
how do you lose with America's Silverchair?
Jared, I've been thinking about it for the last 25 years of my life.
But you continued to play, though, and, like...
I did continue to play. I quit Subminute Radio when we were loading into Studio Litho, Pearl Jam Studio, for the second time, because I wanted to go to junior prom.
Oh, hey, and, priorities, man, right?
That's right. So, and I also knew I wanted to go to college and wasn't going to stay around, and so...
But you moved on to... you played in the band called Carne Asada as well.
That's right.
So, two things I want to know about this. You've got, like, this alter ego.
Yes.
The ugly American.
Yes.
But then you also played something called punk rock mariachi.
Yes.
What even is that?
Well, what do you think it is?
I don't even know. I know what mariachi is. I know what punk is. But, like, I'm having difficulty pushing them together.
It is. It's a fusion of punk rock and mariachi music.
Are you like the only guys who ever did that? Like, I have no idea if there are other bands out there in that genre.
I think we were the first, but I actually do think there are others. And there was only one Mexican dude. The rest of us were gringos. But yeah, and so we did, we like played La Cucaracha and like Cielito Lindo and a couple traditionals. And then the other songs were just straight up punk rock, like In Your Face.
Oh, that's funny. Wow. And you guys actually, like, you and your bandmates were in an MTV series as well.
Yes.
Animated version.
An animated Good Vibes, which was a short-lived series on MTV created by Brad Abelson, who worked on The Simpsons, and now I think he's working, like, on the Minions movies.
Oh, I love, can I say that I love the Minions movies? Not to digress too far, but I really enjoy them as a parent.
I think
they're really funny.
I think I should see them then, because I respect your taste,
dude. The first Minions movie was great. It was great.
Okay. Well, so yeah, and then so we got forever. He basically, Brad, who knew about the project of Carne Asada, he wrote us into Good Vibes. And so we were in a couple of videos, and, like, the main character has a Carne Asada banner, and, like, they go to this bar and Carne Asada's playing. And so I actually, you know, I've been animated. I am a cartoon character. And I'll be that for the rest of my life. Even Brad, the guy who created the show that is no longer on the air, he can't even take that away from me. And he created it. And
that's
so
amazing.
I sometimes use it as, like, my avatar, and it's like
I think that's awesome.
Pretty funny.
Can I say, though, like, I watched the preview that you sent me a link for the preview for the show was actually really funny. I really enjoyed it. No, like, it was legitimately so.
Yeah, I don't. You know, who knows why the studios, you know, turn on you.
This is all like really educational for me. Like, you're right there, and then like, man, the Hollywood types, the studio types, just don't buy in. Like, I don't know. I feel like you were wronged.
Yeah, right.
For real.
And maybe and now I'm in legal tech, and so I think.
And here we are, bringing it full circle.
Yes.
But the other thing I thought was funny is like, in this Good Vibe show, like the cast was kind of crazy. Like you had Josh Gad in there. You had like Adam Brody from the OC, which you talked about before. Olivia Thirlby was in there too. Like they're famous people in the show.
Yeah. I mean, I think like it was supposed to be, you know, a great animated series. And I think they only got one season, I want to say.
Yeah, that's right. So maybe the alternative world version of this is if Good Vibes continues, if you skyrocket to fame as Carne Asada appearing on Good Vibes, like maybe Josh Gad is never Olaf in Frozen, and then my daughter's life is ruined. So there's another way to look at it as well.
And that sounds horrible.
Totally.
Or there's another alternate universe where I'm in my mansion and ready, you know, not in legal tech.
True.
True. But yet,
but we are
in this. We are in this reality.
Which one of those realities doesn't have a pandemic? Anyway, right. This was great. I had a lot of fun talking about this, Chad. Seriously, amazing work. Yeah.
Good. I'm glad you enjoyed hearing about my almost famous past. And a lot of good stories. And you know what? I still have the dream, you know, one day. I gave up, you know, with the hope of getting a movie made in my mid-20s and being in LA. But like, I also haven't given up on the hope of, you know, maybe I'll be 50 and get to make my movie. And then, and that's the ultimate maybe dream.
You never know, man. Maybe one of those days you're in the bathroom and Ryan Gosling's like, hey, man, that movie was great.
Right. Do I know you? So we'll see.
Everybody, that's Chad Sands of Tracers, Jumper Away, and formerly of Carne Asada. My producer is now telling me that we're running out of time. So we're going to forgo our discussion of Alternative Careers Pigeon Racing Edition. We'll save that for next time. Instead, let's jump straight to our musical guest. Ladies and gentlemen, playing All Over You off their 2009 album, Ulterior Motives, The Jury Pool.
Pleasant conversation. If you're a lawyer running a solo or small firm and you're looking for other lawyers to talk through issues you're currently facing in your practice, join the Unbillable Hours Community Roundtable, a free virtual event on the third Thursday of every month. Lawyers from all over the country come together and meet with me, lawyer and law firm management consultant Christopher T. Anderson, to discuss best practices on topics such as marketing, client acquisition, hiring and firing, and time management. The conversation is free to join, but requires a simple reservation. The link to RSVP can be found on the Unbillable Hour page at LegalTalkNetwork.com. We'll see you there.